All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday afternoon. We're looking at an article from the Washington Post. And in the office today, we have Scott Newton. And Scott, tell us about who you are and where you minister to the body of Christ.
Okay. I'm a church planter. I'm a missionary. For the past 2.5 years, we've been living in Barcelona, Spain. And about a year ago, January, we launched our first church in a town of called Ripollet, which is just north of Barcelona, the only gospel-preaching church in that city of about 60,000 people. And praise the Lord, it's doing well.
And how do we find out more information about you if someone's out there and they want to learn more about your ministry?
You can visit us on Facebook with the handle Newtons2Spain altogether, or visit our website, which is www.pswe.net.
All right, very good. Okay, Brian, get us started.
All right, so the title is, Do Muslims and Christians Worship the Same God? College suspends professor who said yes. And this is from the Washington Post. Wheaton College, a prominent evangelical school in Illinois, has placed a professor on administrative leave after she posted on Facebook that Muslims and Christians worship the same God. The official school statement Tuesday about Associate Professor of Political Science LaRisha Hawkins' suspension said Wheaton's professors should engage in and speak about public issues in ways that faithfully represent the college's evangelical statement of faith. Following a protest and sit-in of about 100 people Wednesday afternoon on campus, President Philip Ryken and later Provost Stanton Jones said they would not be lifting the suspension. It wasn't clear how long Hawkins was suspended for, but some of the student leaders who had been involved in talks with administrators said it was through the spring semester. The school's communications office on Wednesday declined to comment to the Washington Post. Protesters chanted, "Reinstate Doc Hawk, we love Wheaton," and some evangelical women wore, is it hijabs?
Hijabs. Yeah.
Hijabs. In solidarity. In her December 10th Facebook post, Hawkins was also wearing a hijab, explaining that she planned to do so through the entire Christian season of Advent to show human solidarity with Muslims. She didn't state why in her piece and did not return requests for comment to the post. But this fall has seen anti-Islamic rhetoric rise sharply in the public square, including by GOP presidential candidates. Hundreds of people liked her post, and more praised her intensely in comments. I stand in human solidarity with my Muslim neighbor because we are formed of the same primordial clay, descendants of the same cradle of humankind, she wrote. I stand in religious solidarity with Muslims because they, like me, a Christian, are people of the book. But I tell my students theoretical solidarity is not solidarity at all. Thus, beginning tonight, my solidarity has become embodied solidarity. She linked to a Christianity Today interview with Yale theologian Miroslav Volf on the topic. In the piece, Volf said that all Christians don't worship the same God and all Muslims don't worship the same God. But I think that Muslims and Christians who embrace the normative traditions of their faith refer to the same object, to the same being when they pray, when they worship, when they talk about God. The reference is the same. The description of God is partly different.
Yale theologian. Is that a oxymoron?
All right, so let's pause for a minute. The article's not quite done, but Wheatonville. What do you know about Wheaton College?
I associate it primarily with Billy Graham. I'm not sure to what degree, but I'm pretty sure that's where he went.
Isn't he a graduate?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and John Piper, too, right?
And Bart Ehrman.
Jim Elliott.
Jim Elliott, right?
Wait, there are Ehrmans in that company. That was So, you know, not all good.
Not all are good.
And Ryken's a pretty conservative Reformed theologian, writes pretty profusely. Mm-hmm. Son of Leland Ryken. Helped write some of the literary Bible stuff that you see out there.
We mentioned Billy Graham, and so I was trying to get my kids to write down the word evangelist on a test, so I gave the hint, Billy Graham. Mm. And they just looked at me like, who is that? And then one kid said, does he play basketball? And so then I paused in sixth grade, and I said, if you positively know who Billy Graham is, raise your hand. And it was about 40% of the class.
That's amazing.
So we assume things all the time as teachers. We just constantly assume, and they didn't have a clue. You know, this at one point would be absolutely considered a solid, fundamental Bible-believing college.
Firmly evangelical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly. I mean, absolutely. So isn't it quite indicative of the transition that we're under, where an evangelical professor is dressing up with this Muslim garb in order to relate to those who are going to hell?
And not only just doing that, but also professing solidarity with them because they worship the same God and are people of the book. Last time I checked, it was a different book. So you know, it's ridiculous, really, when you sit back and look at it.
And isn't it indicative of the greater picture, which is the students that are rallying around her, that are you know, people who grow up in liberal homes where mom and dad are divorced and life is a mess, they don't end up at Wheaton.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I don't know what tuition is at Wheaton, but they're not giving it away.
No. You know, and you don't go to Wheaton because you want to party and get laid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to use lingo that's coarse and reflective of the generation, modern, that's not why you go to Wheaton. I mean, in many regards, I would say it's basically a tier under a Liberty or a Bob Jones or a PCC. It's not going to be that conservative, but it's certainly not ECU. It's not NC State, right? I mean, they're going to have rules here.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're an evangelical school.
I think what you see here is, it's the same thing we've talked about with, you know, that pastors and different people take stands on issues until they have a personal relationship with somebody that exhibits that sin. We've talked about it with the homosexual idea. You know, as soon as you have a relative or a friend that practices homosexuality, all of a sudden my view on homosexuality in the Bible changes. And I think what I see here is she's a cool teacher.
Right.
You know, if she's doing this, then she's doing edgy stuff in the classroom already. You know, and every public school in the country has that teacher, you know, the one that, you know, because I was in public school for a few years, both as a student and a teacher. You know, you got that student that pushes, the teacher that pushes the envelope, you know, uses some coarse language in class and you know, relates to the kids. And the kids, you know, the kids just gravitate to that because there's a cool factor there. Well, if she's willing to do this, I guarantee you she's edgy in class. And so why are they calling to reinstate her? Because she's the cool teacher. She can't be that bad. You know, she says she loves Jesus. She says she's a Christian. So, you know, bring her back because she's our cool teacher. We don't want to lose her compared to the, you know, the 65-year-old guy that's teaching theology down the hall that bores everybody to tears.
And theology is just a stuffy thing exactly. For 65-year-old guys in ivory towers. That's all it's for. So.
I don't understand why the college would just place her on leave instead of firing her on the spot.
I thought it said she was a tenured teacher.
Yeah, she is. She's the only black tenured teacher at Wheaton.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
That's
so, probably trying to let some due process, I'm sure,
unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they're a known school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not Bob Jones. This is a known school. I mean, it has their graduates write books. Their graduates go on to become presidents of schools. I mean, probably the endowment at this place is incredible. You know?
It's not an easy school to get into. It's not like PCC or Bob Jones.
No,
if you apply, you get in. Or Liberty.
No, it's
different. And we're not in Virginia, South Carolina, or Pensacola.
We're in Chicago.
We're in Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to get a whole different reception up there if that's the... they're under damage control. You know, they can't fire her on day one. They'll get...
And she knows
they'll
that.
Get, yeah, they'll get...
She's positioned herself absolutely for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would suggest, I thought you were going to go, you went with the students with regard to this, I know someone who, I thought you were going to go with her, with the perspective, David, of she's got a Muslim neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got a Muslim, someone,
yeah.
You know.
I would say that's probably true, too.
And that's where it really becomes problematic,
mm-hmm.
You know, because they're wonderful people, and she takes out her trash and she washes my kid. And one time my dog was lost and she helped me find my dog. You know what I'm talking about, Bill? All these things. And isn't it difficult for us to look at a person like that and say, you're going to hell?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that is not easy. I mean, everything about hell and the separation of a different God and all that,
It wouldn't mean all that different, though, having a good Catholic neighbor.
Absolutely, I agree.
You know, and, you know, again, when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in a Catholic town, and I mean, they were good moral people. You know, they weren't sleeping around. They weren't.
And the difference, Steve, is that we don't say you're worshiping a different God when it comes to a Catholic.
Okay, that'd be true.
You see where I'm going with
right.
that?
So we would still, you know,
we would probably want to think that they need to be evangelized because they haven't heard a clear presentation of the gospel or something like that.
Right.
You know, this becomes really difficult. We worship the same God. We're of the same book. There's just a little bit difference, Bill, in the way we describe it. Would you agree with him that there's a little bit difference between the way we describe our God and they describe their God?
Certainly. But I'm not sure that the neighbor would pronounce such a difference. The imam, yeah. The one that you bring up on Middle East Media Research Institute, absolutely. I mean, that's the very well-known Islam, but typically the neighbor just isn't up on all of the problems with the so-called faith. You know, you ask them to say something derogatory about Jesus, they won't do it because he's a great prophet. So at the user level, I can really understand being sympathetic to a Muslim.
Yeah, it's almost the same with the Mormon.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, most Mormons don't understand the bizarre things that are happening at the temples and the weirdness that's associated with that. I mean, you have a better understanding of the bizarre of their own religion. God had sex with somebody. They don't talk in that kind of a language.
No. Well, I think what you see is if we're talking mainstream Christianity, you know, the great majority of so-called Christians in the country don't understand the gospel. You know, you started this a few weeks ago in one of your sermons. You asked somebody to articulate the gospel. How many answers would we get? How many iterations of the gospel would we get? And so I'd imagine that there's a lot of Muslims that are the exact same way. They're culturally Muslim, just like they were culturally Christian or culturally Catholic, and they know the basics, but they really don't get into this deep stuff. So it's really easy to get to the point where we go, hey, we both worship God. You know, we both are pray. You know, we both are people of a holy book. So, you know, it's very easy to get to pluralism from a Christian perspective that's not educated.
True human solidarity, though, should drive evangelism. You know, if I value your humanness as one that's created in the image of God, that should drive me to be even more compassionate about the end of the story for you.
Mm-hmm.
So human solidarity does not lead to theological solidarity. She has made a bridge cross that wasn't intended there, and you don't all of a sudden say because we have human solidarity, we have this theological solidarity. You can't do that.
So you would argue that solidarity should lead to evangelism.
Absolutely, I value you as a person. I can't fathom you as a person suffering forever in a hell that was designed for angelic beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That frightens me on your behalf.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sorry, Steve. You were getting ready to say something.
I was just going to say, you know, it seems like everybody's gone so far with the Muslim issue because, you know, and again, with, you know, we can, you know, with the Catholics, okay, we can maybe stretch and say, you know, we worship the same God or whatever, and they just need to be evangelized. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we go around wearing crucifixes and putting statues of Jesus up in our yard,
right,
and the Virgin Mary, or whether it's a Buddhist that's our neighbor, and, you know, so we're going to put a Buddha. You know, we don't do that. You know, we might say they're good people, and, you know, we feel, you know, we have some emotion towards them, but, you know, we don't dress like the Muslim just to prove a point.
Well, of course, we're making the assumption that this woman is converted.
Yeah, I would say.
Or even if she's not. I mean, you know, again, I mean, even an unconverted person that has a Catholic as a neighbor might think they're a good person, but, you know, they're not going to go put a crucifix in.
Unless they're an activist.
Okay, yeah.
Right, but, you know, they're an activist, then they're going
to
go stand on
the
top.
Average person,
right,
to do those.
But
things.
She's clearly an activist.
Yeah, she right now is going to get an invitation to the White House. Absolutely,
probably.
That's what they decided.
That's very true.
She's being
right.
crucified by the bigoted, evangelical, right wing, snobby, rude, hateful.
Probably mostly white.
Yeah, probably mostly white.
Yeah.
And she's going to be a hero.
John, you were getting ready.
Yeah, I think it's a step further back from this because it was a very telling statement when she said we were both
from the same primordial clay.
Right. Exactly.
That is not those are not words that someone who believes in a creator God uses.
Exactly.
Those are words that the
it's the educated person
right.
uses those.
When you talk about clay, but not primordial clay.
Right. Yes. Right.
Those are the words that the educational establishment.
Establishment
uses when they're talking about Darwinian. Mm-hmm.
This woman believes that the Earth is a billion years old.
So I have to understand then. She can't understand. She can't understand human solidarity the way we do because, if let's just say, for instance, let's just walk this back. If we're all evolved and these worships come from just different evolutionary tracks. Well, you evolved to worship Christianity and you evolved to worship, Allah and Buddha and all this, well then, really, that's just lip service to a name on paper, right? The God doesn't even exist. So
I
wonder, in her mind, does the true, one true God even exist? Because, I mean, I can't just say automatically yes, because she doesn't even recognize him as creator.
Yeah, I would submit that she is a Christian from a cultural perspective.
And very best a deist. At very best.
Right, and which I would submit, that's not worship. And so when we say the title, worship the same God, it means nothing.
Yeah.
You know, if you hold to the fact that we evolved, I really struggle how you can say you worship God.
Yeah, and the idea of worshiping the same God whose scriptures contradict one another, definitely attacks the character of God himself. I mean, now we've got an inconsistent God. Now we've got a contradictory God.
Okay, but David, I don't think that a person like this believes in plenary verbal inspiration.
Well, clearly not.
Yeah. Right?
Right, you can't.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that we talk about is you make a statement like that, and you don't realize the ripples that you have to deal with after you make a statement like that.
Right, and I would suggest to you that most of the people in our congregation read over that sentence, and that buzzword doesn't jump off the page at them. And say, look, there's an indicator. That's a red flag.
I would actually agree with her with the statement of this when she says, do Muslims and Christians worship the same God in this sense that who we're actually talking about? We're talking about the user level of Muslims and Christians. That is absolutely true. That when we're talking about, and you just brought this up with worship, who are you actually worshiping? The idea of worship in modern day both Islam, except for extremism and those kind of things. I was recently in Morocco and sitting and talking with them, and what everyone wants is to find the same level. Everyone wants to find solidarity. So the idolatry and the worship that's going on in today is not on either side. It's not worshiping God. It's worshiping peace. And it's a false peace. But it's this idea of worshiping conflict in any sense is evil. And the lack of conflict is the ultimate good. So when she says, do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? I'd say 90% yes.
The same false God?
The same false God, exactly.
Well, and that's the thing, because today, most of the mainstream does not understand somebody who truly is committed to their belief.
Yes.
And I told Pastor Bill this last week. I was so struck by the way that the news reporter presented the case out there when they went into Planned Parenthood and shot it up. Obviously, they're going to go with the insanity defense. Obviously. Because no sane person could be committed to a belief that would drive them to such a radical action.
Not like Phineas said, dude, in the Old Testament.
Right. But the reality is that both Christians and, Muslims who truly follow their faith, they are radical to the point of action. Now, our beliefs do not agree, but, they certainly have a sincere belief that they are right, and we have a sincere belief that we are right, but the problem is there are so many people in the middle that will say, oh, you can both be right.
Right.
And, we reject that. I mean, we just have to. And so what amounts to happening is, if I'm right about God, which, of course, I believe I am, or I would change my mind, right? If I'm right and I believe the Scripture, then those folks have to be wrong. And therefore, when we say, I worship God, they worship, even if we say, well, they're just describing God incorrectly, they've been given the wrong information, they're still worshiping a false God. It can't be. I mean, it's exclusive. It just can't be.
So let's answer the issue. What drives the train to get a place like Wheaton, who has a professor like this on the campus? How do we get here? How do we get to the point where this was a fundamental evangelical college that trained preachers 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years. Well, goodness, Billy Graham's 97 years old, I think, is what I heard in the news.
Yeah,
and he probably graduated when he was 20. So, you know, 25, somewhere around there. So we're dealing with a school that was kicking out preacher boys 70 years ago. So how do we move, Dave, from that to today?
Well, I mean, you know, we could see there are seminaries and universities that have gone even further than Wheaton has.
Right.
You know, that have gone off the deep end in a shorter amount of time. So maybe we should be impressed that Wheaton hasn't totally fallen off the rails yet.
But yeah, but just in general, what is the digression?
I think it starts, for everything, in my opinion, I think it starts with the Word. When inerrancy goes away or when inerrancy is lessened, you start to get leeway with this pluralism and this relativism and these multiple interpretations and everything like that. And so once I take away the inerrancy of the Word, now I can attack the character of God. Now I can attack the deity of Christ. Now I can, you know, it's endless after that. And so in the name of, I don't know, diversity, in the name of political correctness, I don't know what kind of teacher she is. I don't know what her background is. But they certainly compromised in hiring a woman like this.
Yeah, I
would. Clearly, she didn't come into the interview, you know, quoting scripture and as an Orthodox Christian. She came in under a much different thing. And granted, she's teaching political science, but there's got to be some parameters on who they hire as far as the Christian worldview goes, and they must not have a very strong, you know, parameter for that.
Yeah, I mean, they have a pretty solid statement of faith online.
Yeah,
it's pretty solid.
But I noticed that the preamble to the statement of faith said this was originally written in 1924. That gives you a little distance, like, well...
Yeah, I think the other thing...
How would you put that?
Yeah,
we just firmly believe this right now.
It's an apology from the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's a bit harsh. I mean,
I think they're dating it.
They're saying, look, we've been around a really long time. We have a long tradition. I think you're being too cynical. You've watched too much Fox News.
Well,
Fox
the
News.
First thing that
I've been watching CNN more lately, so my kids
don't watch Fox News. I don't even watch Fox News.
I was going to say, with Dave, right after the inerrancy idea, maybe it's just because I'm too much of a fan of Answers in Genesis, but like the primordial clay, taking away a literal 7-day creation week. I mean, you start breaking it down there. I mean, conforming to what popular science says.
I think you were talking about a theological issue, but from a different perspective, what drives this transition?
They've not been thorough in vetting the people that are coming to work.
Right, and why can't they be thorough in vetting?
Well, they're trying to get their student enrollment up and keep money coming.
They're trying to have a certain.
That's exactly what the issue is.
They're trying to have a certain academic ambiance where they want it to be. We're really up here, so we hire people.
Same thing's happening at Liberty.
Yeah,
I was going to say, maybe we've got a cautionary tale for what Liberty's going on.
Right, same thing's happening with
Liberty. A gay drama teacher to teach drama at Liberty.
Say that again?
A gay drama teacher to teach drama that they bring in to help teach drama and help with productions.
Why haven't we done a podcast on that? Is there an article out there about that?
I don't know if there's an article. That's what... The folks that were down here
next week.
I
can't decide which is more ironic, that or a gay guy helping with productions. That's very strange.
So you got to achieve academic excellence. The reason you got to achieve academic excellence is so you can get accredited. The reason you got to get accredited is so you can have students. You got to stay alive, right? You got to keep from collapsing.
Well, and government funding that comes with.
Of course.
All of that.
And then in order to be accredited and legitimate, you got to have diversification, right? And so now where do you find this person? And, you know, how do you... I mean, there have been several times that we have endeavored to hire an African-American preacher here in this church. Several times. Youth pastor, things like that, Dave. Like when before Joe and before... Okay, they're not out there. I mean, they're not readily available. They're not knocking down the doors. I'm talking about gospel-centered, Christ-exalting, straight. They're not present. They're not everywhere.
Well,
you know
like
somebody?
No, I was just kind of chuckling that you said straight after we're talking about the gay teacher.
Yeah, that is important here.
It's a requirement.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to the cultural thing because you know a lot of this is just you know pop theology, cultural. We have, I mean, just if we were willing to admit it, every church has a certain kind of theological and cultural bent and cultures, and we don't like the profile and all those things, but that really, children grow up remembering those things more than they do studying the things that are important if you don't forcibly study the scripture.
Well, it's, I think it's like the college campus is the ideal place for this kind of stuff to occur, even before the real world, because college isn't the real world. You know, they can be in this little bubble and they can talk about pluralism and relativism because everybody loves relativism on paper. You know, on paper it sounds like a great idea. We're all going to get along and we're all going to do different things and we're all going to have different truths. But nobody lives that way in the real world. You can't live that way in the real world. You can't say, you know, my truth is not your truth. Because as soon as somebody punches you in the face or steals your wallet...
Truth matters.
Yeah, all of a sudden, we all agree that that was wrong. You know?
Yeah, or how about just navigating on the highways? Don't we all find that truth matters when we're... I mean, I know you think green is for go, but I think green is for stop. And I know you think that red is for stop. But in my world, yellow is accelerate. I mean...
Yeah, it sounds five.
Right. It sounds absurd,
yeah.
But in fact, it is absolutely necessary. We all believe in absolute truth.
Yeah, and nobody lives without that. You know, like they may and you can do that here in a political science classroom. You can put these theories out there, and kids eat them up. But nobody lives that way.
But if you're a Christian in Syria right now, you can't depend on what this woman is saying.
Yeah,
she's not a source of comfort for you.
No. So, Bill, I want you to answer the question for the listener. How would you explain the defense of the statement that Muslims and Christians don't worship the same God? You've been evangelizing for, what, 2 years, a year and a half with a Muslim?
I have.
Right. You know, and there are a lot of nominal Christians who would subscribe to the survey question, do Christians and Muslims worship the same God? And they would say yes.
Well, theologically, from the perspective of what I understand Muslims teach and what I've studied that they believe, I can say that can be dramatically different than, again, to reference the user level. For example, I might reference the Creator. I call him Jehovah. I call him God, whatever. Someone who speaks Arabic is just going to use the word Allah if he hasn't been Christianized. Now, Christians in North Africa, Middle East that I have bumped into that are Chaldean Christians or are just independent sect Christians, they won't use the name Allah because of the connotations that come along with it from the Muslim world. But in a very loose sense, when I would refer to Allah to a Christian, they knew that I meant the God in heaven. So from that perspective, it's fine. I have no issues. I'm not going to correct anyone because Allah is just an Arabic word for our English word God. And I'm talking about denotation, dictionary entry for dictionary entry. But the problem is most words have usages, not definitions. And when you're talking about the word Allah, it's not just an entry in a dictionary. It is a part of a system. And so it carries with it a complete picture of what that God entails. For example, the Muslim God does not and cannot have a son. That's part of their dogma. That's part of their five pillars is a confession that Allah cannot, does not, will not have a son. Right away, that is the distinguishing characteristic between our gods, is my God does have a son.
So you're saying that Orthodox Muslim doctrine specifically says he does not have a son.
Does not correct? And cannot, because their God is entirely transcendent, which means that he is not able to be touched or touch the world of the material. He cannot create or be created. And so you can't have him as a personal God, or you cannot know him as a personal Savior. Totally transcendent, and so he is unable to reach into the world of the material and never will and never can. It's almost the dualistic world of the Gnostics in the first several centuries, where you have this lesser God that is evil, that made the creative world. The ultimate God is the Logos, and he would never do anything that has anything to do with the material world. And it's a lot like the illusionists of today, like the Muslims who believe that we're down here in the world of the miserable and Allah is allowing us to exist until he decides whether to put us in heaven or hell. Or that's paradise or hell, whichever. You really, if you're interested in winning an argument in 10 posts or less, this is not the right discussion for you. If you're interested in having a relationship with someone and finding out how are they using the name Allah, then you can decide whether or not you want to go, you know, you want to go postal on them and say, no, we don't worship the same God. On the other hand, I have met Muslims who have been won to Christ because someone dared to suggest that Allah does have a son. And you need to know that your God has a son, and he's being wrongly described in your false Bible.
So that, can
and
I interrupt?
Both approaches are valid if your audience understands what you mean.
That's kind of an Acts 17 perspective.
Right.
The tomb of the God that you worship, not knowing who you worship.
Right. Yes. Yeah, Paul did not say, look, you guys are idiots. Let me introduce you to a different God. He's Jehovah. He's in the sky. He says, no, let me introduce you to the God you're describing on that altar right there.
Right, that's what a secularist, right?
Right.
Acts 17, we would say. But we could argue that Peter's point in Acts 2 is to the Jew, same God.
Right.
You just need to know that he's God's son.
Right.
Yes.
That's the hidden revelation in the Old Testament, and I'm here to tell you that you crucified the Son of God. So again, we don't have near as much of a problem telling a Jew. We don't say to a Jew, you don't worship the same God.
Right. We say, no, Jehovah has a son.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the distinction we're trying to make. Right. And what you're suggesting is that it may be more effective
to use their language rather than to just assume, no, you have not been praying to the God in the sky. Now, again, Paul had a different... When Paul was talking in 1 Corinthians 10, and he's talking about people who knowingly worshipped another influence besides Jehovah, called it demon worship.
Buddha?
Right.
Anybody.
Yeah. You know, a tangible God that you can hold in your hands. That is demon worship, he says in 1 Corinthians 10. But if you're talking to the unknown God, then you are dealing with, you know...
So would we say that fundamentally a Muslim understands God's primary attribute as being the creator?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Scott.
I think that, yeah, exactly, that a lot of, I think even where a lot of this breakdown comes in with Christians and not understanding the difference between the two gods is that we're not Christological enough, that we kind of assume, well, Allah is the Father. And we kind of have this idea of the Father and the Son being completely different things, whereas obviously the Bible teaches us a Trinitarian God, that he is three, but he is one at the same time. And, you know, if we're going to look at Colossians and we talk about who Jesus is, he is the Creator God. He is the Creator God. So, if we're talking to Muslims, you know, we have to bring them back to that. We have to bring them back to, you believe in the Creator God, so do we. Let me tell you what his name is. It's Jesus. By him all things consist. By him all things are created. Without him, nothing that is made was made. It's not this separation of, well, he's... We have the Father and you have Allah. No. Everything that exists is made by the hand of God, and that is Jesus. He's not just God's Son. He is God the Son.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's get back to our article, Brian. Do you remember where you left off?
Yes.
About
40 students had drafted a letter Tuesday night asking Riken to reconsider the suspension. The letter quotes a coalition of concerned students and alumni. We believe that there is nothing in Larisha Hawkins' public statements that goes against the belief in the power of God, Christ, or the Holy Spirit that the Statement of Faith deems as a necessary component to Wheaton's affiliation. It reads, it has asked that she be reinstated. Hawkins, according to the students at the meeting, is the only tenured black female professor at Wheaton. Students appeared split on Wednesday. Luke Nalesson, a sophomore, said, "The Christian faith is fundamentally different from Islamic faith, and although it's admirable what Professor Hawkins said, I'm in no position to try to advocate for her." Levi Suzma, a senior, said, "I trust Riken and what he decides to do. Student leaders don't stand for all students." Even those who opposed Hawkins' suspension said they felt she was misunderstood. Tremaine Kalibu, another good one, a sophomore who studies international relations, wore a hijab to the protest to show solidarity with Muslims. She said, "Hawkins has been a place of solace and solidarity, particularly for marginalized people, and is a support for black students like Kalibu." I think she meant Islam and Christianity and Judaism all derive from a history and are all monotheistic. We come from the same Abrahamic history. We are comfortable with Catholics and Jews but remain quiet when Muslims are persecuted, said Kalibu 19, who grew up in Uganda but now lives in the D.C. region. I think people are saying, she's saying the religions are fundamentally the same, but that's not necessarily true. Muslims don't believe Jesus is the Son of God. At the meeting Tuesday night, the focus was on concern for free speech and thought.
All right, let's pause. David, look like you had a thought.
You know, he's saying, well, I don't think that's what she's saying, but that's exactly what she said. You know, you're trying to, clearly you wouldn't be soft-pedaling it here if she wasn't saying something that needed to be retranslated.
She hasn't clarified her statement.
Not at all. Where are her quotes in this whole thing? She's kind of made her statement and then walked away.
Yeah. And again, the focus was on a concern for free speech and thought. And this isn't, again, this has nothing to do with the woman's free speech. She was able to speak freely, and now she suffers the consequences. The same way when the fire chief in Atlanta writes a book with his supposed free speech, and the mayor, Kasim Reed, wants to fire him, now all of a sudden, no, free speech, you know, doesn't translate into the workplace. Well, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. And this is where, again, there's another double standard where they're trying to have it both ways.
Well, I love the fact that they're trying to tie persecution to the idea or the statement that they are not the same, that she's somehow tying that together, that these are for marginalized people and people who are being persecuted, Muslims are being persecuted. That's not persecution. It goes back to what Bill said. It's actually affirming your humanity and caring for your humanity to tell you that you're wrong. That's not persecution.
Yeah, and plus what she saw, I mean, I don't know what he's taught, she, right? Tremaine, yeah, whatever. She says, why are we comfortable when Catholics and Jews, with Catholic and Jews, but remain quiet when Muslims are persecuted?
What in the world is she talking about?
Yeah, what is she talking about? Because if Muslims are being persecuted, I'm against that too, you know, and when are we, where's the Catholic persecution going on in the United States? Where's the Jewish persecution going on that we're talking about?
Yeah, and that's why tie is so crazy.
Again, it's just out there stuff. There's nothing tangible here that she's making an argument about.
Because on the flip side of things, right now in the world, there are Catholics and Jews that, in the name of Catholicism and in the name of Jewishness, are blowing up stuff. So, I mean, we can't make this link just because of a knee-jerk reaction to the climate that we live in.
Yes, interesting the degree to which the defender is trying to redefine what she said, you know,
repurpose it.
One good thing is that they recognize some of the problems with her statement because they keep saying stuff like, "Well, yeah, Jesus is the Son of God," and so at least Wheaton students know that this isn't right.
Right. Yeah, I think she meant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she meant. Well, what about what she said?
Yeah, I mean, she says that I stand in religious solidarity with Muslims because they, like me, a Christian, are people of the book. Not people of a book.
Right.
People of the book.
Not people of
the
origin.
Is a specific article, right? A definite article. The book. They're not people of the book. They're people of a book. So, you know, when you say things like that, don't be surprised when people, when Christians are upset with that.
At a conservative evangelical university.
Yeah. And yeah, she can say this at the University of Illinois all she wants. And nobody's going to bat an eye.
We wouldn't even have an article. Yeah. Right. There wouldn't be no conversation.
But where you're employed, you know, it has an impact on what you're allowed to say and write.
You know, the other question is, why are we even quoting a 19-year-old?
In fairness, she taught students are split, and so she referenced two different students.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is we're making a fashion out of rebels and young people. And I'm sorry, Scripture doesn't even go that way. Read the Proverbs and you find 31 chapters of anti-rebellion and the hoary head gets the honor. And this article is written in a way where we're going to give an equal voice. Sophomore Connor Jenkins said the professor opened up a conversation was shut down. What kind of virtue is there in opening up conversations in evangelical institutions about things that are not evangelical? And we're going to, I'm sorry, I'm a little tired of everyone thinking that it's glamorous that you have this quasi-virtue of not knowing anything. Open up a conversation. As if that's some kind of virtue. We just What we wanted to do is put lots of doubt in the classroom about what we as an institution believe. And we want to seem multifaceted. So we're going to quote a 19-year-old and follow it up with a 20-year-old about how this professor opened up a conversation. Look around. If someone half your age has to be defending you, you're probably not saying the right thing.
So the that's because Ross, that hoary head 19. Is too conservative. And you ask any older person, and they're going to fall down on the side of wisdom and conservation, and that's not what drives these movements.
No.
Change and rebelling against what the current system is what drives the young and the college campus, and I mean, and that's what sells on the news.
And but it's not just a liberal thing.
No, it's not.
It's a conservative thing right now, too. You're not going to take away my dadgum guns. You're not going to take them away. I got a right to keep my guns. Well, not if the law says you don't have a right to keep them. It's going both ways.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, I think, the whole thing. Well, she was shut down. When was she shut down? She can say anything she wants.
Yeah, and the next day, a staff member at Wheaton says she's being used as a scapegoat. How is she being used as a scapegoat?
She was allowed to say whatever she wanted.
Guess on what? Her she's, private Facebook page.
Yeah, she has... She's dealing with consequences of it. Do they have a gag order on her? Do they say she can't talk? She can say whatever she wants. Now, are there consequences for it? Yeah.
And I bet they're probably still paying her.
I'm guarantee they are, yeah.
Okay, the suspension took place less than a week after Wheaton College student leaders published an open letter in their newspaper denouncing recent controversial comments by Liberty University President Jerry Falwell. Speaking to thousands of students about terrorism, Falwell urged them to arm themselves, saying it would end those Muslims. He later said he meant only violent radicals. Did anybody see that YouTube clip?
Yeah.
I thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That wasn't great.
Had he been hanging out with Donald Trump?
No, exactly. That was absurd.
Did you see it?
No.
So maybe it's worth finding it on YouTube for just a second and looking at it. But he says that he's packing. He says he's carrying a weapon right then and there at the, what do they call it? It's not
convocation.
Convocation.
Yeah, that's kind of a...
It's not a colloquium?
It's not a colloquium. It's not quite that academic.
You go to a place where they have a colloquium. Yeah.
Colloquia.
Yeah, you're right, colloquia.
I know it starts with a C, but that's just
colloquy.
What...
Colloquy is the singular.
Oh,
my soul.
That's
what
I'm talking about. That's what I mean.
Yes.
But he was talking off the top of his head in response to... somebody being armed to bring an end to the carnage that happened in California. And from a very pragmatic perspective, you can understand what he says. Because every time a soldier reloads, there's an opportunity to take him out. You found it?
I think so. I'm not sure.
There was a sound bite right there.
That's him.
That's him? That's Falwell?
Right. Do you want to turn it on? Let's listen.
Before we dismiss this morning, I wanted to mention last night Becky and I were watching the Fox News reports on the shootings in California, and we were so touched by Mike Madden, the first responder. I don't know, did anybody see that last night? He was the police officer who was the first responder to the terrible murders at the community center there, and he told a story about no matter how well you're prepared in your training to deal with something like that, that there's just no way to, when you walk in and you see the carnage and you smell the smell of gunpowder, and it's just something that you can never be prepared for. So we contacted his family or his office after that report to see if he had any sons or daughters who were looking for a place to attend college. We offered to help with the scholarships. We also are trying to contact the victim who had six children who was killed in that carnage. And it just blows my mind when I see the President of the United States say that the answer to circumstances like that is more gun control. I mean, if the people... some of those people in that community center had what I've got in my back pocket right now. Is it illegal to pull it out? I don't know. I've always thought if more good people people had concealed carry permits, then we could end those Muslims before they walk in and kill us.
All right. Right. So everybody says stupid things, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. If you don't believe us, just ask our wives.
Yeah, you can ask an entire world for me a few years ago. But
when your name is Falwell, you need to, wow. You know you're going to be under a microscope constantly. That's inexcusable, man. You've got to be thinking.
He is speaking what more and more Americans are thinking.
So is Trump.
Yeah. Right, and that's why he's crazy. Yeah. The polls. Because everyone is thinking if one person had a weapon there, if one person could have stopped the carnage when he did a magazine change. I mean, anytime you hear about magazine changes occurring in these situations, I mean, anyone who's ever been a soldier understands that a magazine change is your worst nightmare. That's why you operate in buddy teams. Bill and I are not going to do a magazine change at the same time. You've got to cover my back while I'm doing this. Because I am now vulnerable. And yes, maybe this, yes, not maybe, yes, we don't want to end Muslims' lives, but I promise you, if our daughters, our wives, our children were at that center, if our mother was at that center, we would be thrilled if there was someone there armed with a weapon that could have put an end to it.
Sure.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I think what you see is that, you know, these guys don't attack places where there's going to be guns. Yeah. They pick, you know, we were talking in class, you know, about people going to see the new Star Wars movie. And, you know, that's a target. You're going to have a full theater full of people, and it's happened before, and it could happen again. And I said, but it probably won't happen in Fayetteville.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody wants to shoot up a movie theater, this ain't the town they're going to try it in.
A lot of people are going that little sticker on the door.
We're probably pretty safe. They got stuff in their back pockets, too, in the theater. I mean, that guy wouldn't get off a couple shots before he was down. You know, they're going to go somewhere that's, you know, they're going to go to Chicago. They're going to go to Denver, Colorado. They're going to go to Los Angeles, California, where there are so-called gun-free zones, because they know they can get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable to me. The more you see in Fayetteville, I was at Lowe's last night getting more Christmas lights. It's endless. And so exasperated with the entire Christmas light industry.
Grinch. The manger headlines.
Yeah. Walking down there, there's packing right there on the side. And we get a 9mm desert camouflage. I mean, it's a routine business in this town, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, more and more people see that the first responders are not going to be able to respond enough time. They can't cover everywhere. I've got to be able to protect my family. What do you do with that? I mean, from a Christian perspective, we desire that they live forever so they can come to Christ. They live as long as possible when they come to Christ. When they're shooting at somebody, they're a target. They're a threat. What are your thoughts, Joey? Because you made particular reference earlier to these rednecks who need to realize they're going to have to give up their guns.
There's a law, and there's obedience to the law. And right now, you don't have to give up your gun. But there are certainly people in this community and in other communities that I don't want carrying a gun. There's a big stink on Buffalo Wild Wings put on their doors. You can't carry a gun in Buffalo Wild Wings. And when Buffalo Wild Wings puts on their door, I'm glad, because they sell alcohol. And I don't want people drinking and having guns on their hips. So I think there's plenty of nut jobs and crazy people that, yes, someone carrying a gun could end a situation like this and it be not as bad as it could be. On the flip side, it could also be worse, because a lot of people, this town aside, a lot of people aren't going to be trained to use a gun in a high-pressure situation like that, and it could actually make the situation worse. So I'm not entirely comfortable with everybody walking around with a gun on a hip, especially when my 3-year-old boy is next to me. Right. And as road ragey as people are these days, it doesn't make me feel any more comfortable.
Right. And I'm not comfortable.
And I know I'm a liberal, and I just lost some church support. Yeah. But, oh, well.
You know, what's interesting about that to me is when we talk about guns, and we're talking about guns in the same conversation, well, just a little while ago, we were talking about an educational institution, right? And we referenced Darwin. And I think Darwin and dangerous thought has sent more people to hell than any guns have ever. And I think you asked the question a while ago, how did we get here? the three things that came to my mind right away is, number one, this idea that everyone deserves an education, no matter what the parents that brought that person into the world does. So, you know, the yellow school buses all over America that pick up children whose parents are too lazy to take them, you know, whose God-ordained authority is failing, we have this idea, and, you know, I just lost a whole bunch of people because how could you say something like that? Everybody doesn't deserve an education. Well, this is the end outcome because we begin to become humanists. And so we walk down this road where altruism, the ultimate goal is peace and everyone being educated and flourishing. Well, I mean, I think that's a much more dangerous thought because it flies in the face of a sovereign God than these issues that we currently
have. I'm struggling with you right now, John, and we're friends and all, but I'm struggling with a couple things that you're saying. First of all, that child did not ask to be born to idiot parents.
Yeah. Right.
And you're saying that the natural consequence of being born to idiot parents is you just can't get an education.
No, I'm saying that once our society was established in America, and this is the context of America. Now, you can't rip this out of our context, because you asked, how did we get here?
I asked how Wheaton got there.
Right, and this is how, I think, this is how we got there. Because it's a three-part thing. First of all, we got affluence, and we didn't have to worry about, you know, dying in the winter and raising crops. And so we had some free time, so now we're going to focus on education. And then as we began to focus on education, Darwin came around, and the educators gravitated, all the thinkers in society began to throw out the scripture and go towards Darwinian thought, which for hundreds of years now, I don't know, what, 100 and something years?
1859.
Yeah. Has really influenced the public school system. And I would say probably a large percentage of college students today are products of the public school system. And the basic biblical worldview is skewed. It's shifted. It's not creation. It's things like equality is the supreme ultimate goal of humankind. They're not taught. They're sinners, depraved. When I went to a college campus to get an education in how to teach education, it was all about those things. They didn't even show me how to do a grade book. You know, this is a college campus, secular college campus, and all it was humanism, 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 and we have turned that over and over and over again. Partly because of isolationism when it comes to education. We just said, well, we can't influence that, so we'll just build our own over here. And then the third idea is the idea that everything is going to always be the same. Well, Wheaton's going to always be strong. Well, that's not how life is. Things crescendo, and then they decrescendo. They die down. Churches come, and churches go. But we've got this idea, almost like an entitlement mentality, that Berean has to be Berean all the time, forever. And I think that's how we're really vulnerable and susceptible to these things.
So you're saying Wheaton should ultimately be okay closing their doors, holding the standards where they ought to be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you asked how we got here. We got to raise the capital. We got to raise the funds. So we got to change our message, because what happens now, what worked now back then is not going to work now. Because think about what they were fighting when Wheaton opened. They were fighting that Darwinist, you know,
downgrade controversy stuff.
Yeah, the whole Westcott and Hort and just everybody wanting to change this. Well, think how far we've slid from then. And we had people back then, Scopes trial and all those things. We had people back then that had an outcry. Well, it didn't do any good because we gave it away in the educational system. So what we truly, if we really want to make an impact, we need to train teachers to go into the public school system and stand up for the truth of the Bible instead of going to Christian schools.
I would like to caveat on that, though, and say train them to go in public school systems and die. Because that is a missing piece of American Christianity theology. Is you're still carrying a cross, mm-hmm. and we are so desperate to avoid the cross. Mm-hmm. It's like we can't can't fathom the idea of losing military career with 16, 17 years in the Army. And can't fathom losing a retirement plan because I got fired by a school board. We couldn't fathom that. Our job is to be a prosperous people,
yes,
and to put our kids through college and to make sure our son has his first car and so on and so forth. These are pressures on me. I'm thinking about this stuff all the time, and I cannot fathom carrying a cross.
And
so we don't want to train that.
Yeah, and I think that's part of having a gun on my hip. I mean, Peter was ready to fight for Jesus, and he said, put the sword away. And I'm not saying that's a complete, that we should never defend ourselves. But at the same time, I have to die, Peter. I have to die. Sometimes people have to suffer. And we think that if we carry a gun on our hip that we're not going to have to suffer anymore. But that's, we are supposed to suffer in some circumstances. I do have a shotgun at home. I do know how to use it. But I don't carry it around everywhere because I don't know what I'm going to do on a bad day. And I'm okay with the fact that maybe I won't be able to protect my family out in public because I don't have a gun on my hip. But I also know that God is sovereign and God is in control. And even if I did have a gun on my hip, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be able to save the day every time, everywhere I go.
No, it doesn't. But if the reverse to that, Joey, is the fact that you don't know that the means that God chooses to save Hutch's life is someone with a gun on
the
hip.
It very well may be.
Yeah, you're asking how you would prefer to not put someone in hell, basically. You want them to live to see a day of salvation. I was just sitting here thinking, I think I would assume that their name was not in the Book of Life from the foundation of the world and just pull the trigger.
well, that's the same thing with the idea that these institutions are supposed to live forever. I mean, how long do we wait? I mean, do we really believe that if they live another 40 years, they're not going to still deny Christ? I mean,
I say you cap them.
Yeah.
I don't
hold the gun like this.
Just that. Two in the chest, one in the head.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, back on the education issue, you know, there was a time when women weren't allowed to be educated, right? I mean, there was a time in history when it wasn't.
Yeah, they were allowed to vote. In 1920, the 19th Amendment, something like that, 1922, the suffrage, yeah.
Yeah,
right?
And certainly we wouldn't say today, well, we believe that, you know, no girls should be educated. We don't believe that. But there is a radical feminism that's out there that says things like women are oppressed. You know, and they take to the extreme, and it's all based in humanism, and...
Yeah, but that doesn't mean the issue is education, John.
Well, see, I disagree, because I think that the minute we put those yellow buses out there and said somebody else is responsible for educating my kids is really an issue, because it creates more and more of a problem, because as it starts, it's maybe parents who can't get their kids to school.
But you were saying...
But now everybody sends little Johnny and Susie off from a like real little ridiculous age onto that yellow school bus where people we don't know have control over them. So I disagree. I think the yellow school bus is a big problem.
I both agree and disagree.
But that's the public school system, the mass public school system. That's a little bit different than saying education.
Right, but we are the same people who say that when a, let's just put it out there, when a Zion AME church goes out and says that our mission is to make sure people are educated, we say, that's social gospel, we're not going to do that. I mean, it's, we got
there is
a part
degree
of the problem or we're part of the solution.
Right, but there is a degree, John, to where part of this is loving your neighbor as yourself.
Right. Yes. And I'm not suggesting we don't take care of impoverished people. I'm not suggesting we don't take care of people who can't get themselves to school. What I'm suggesting is the system that we built is become very, very problematic because it creates lazy people, especially parents, who don't drop their kids off at school. They don't even put them in their own cars anymore.
Yeah, I don't know
what
it creates. But it became a right instead of a privilege to go to school. And I think that's part of where we're at as a nation. And but that we had kids going to school for free a long time before they started busting them in. That's been a part of our country for a long time. The old Deluder Satan Act way back when. Every kid in the colony, every kid in this town needs to go to school, and if he's not at a certain level, we're going to banish the parents for this. We're going to punish the parents because their kids don't know certain things. So it's
and
not
the,
a
in
yellow
the
school bus.
Good.
It doesn't happen nowadays.
Well, and not enforcing education in that way is kind of Darwinism. It's saying, well, you were born into a stinky family. Stinks to be you.
But I'm just saying that what we've done, I mean, it was great as long as the textbook was, you know, McGuffey's Reader and the King James Bible. But now that it's not, you're just handing them over.
Well, I mean, you're right. You are handing them over. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to say I agree and disagree with that. I mean, obviously, yes, the school system is flawed and it's problematic, and what's being taught is definitely messed up. But you know, to crucify the school system and say that you know, what's the alternative there? I think that individually, as families and as leaders of our homes, obviously, we have the responsibility, and that's our sphere of influence. But I'm not going to gripe about my country educating other people. For instance, I live in Spain right now, and I went to the equivalent of a PTA meeting when my daughter, she's six, started first grade over there. And they had the introductory talk where they said they gave us the requirements and what's expected of the parents and then what we can expect of the school. And on the requirements for the school, it said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to teach your kids all these different things. And it was a lot of that junk as well. It was, you know, our responsibility is to teach them self-esteem and all these different things. And then when it came to the parents' responsibility, not just make sure you bring your kid, make sure that they're taken care of physically, they have the things that they need. It said make sure that you reinforce at home what's being taught to them with these social values here at school. And I had to obviously raise my hand, and in my limited Catalan, I had to tell them that's not what's going to happen. It's going to be the other way around. You know, I'm going to teach them biblically. I'm going to take responsibility as the head of my house to teach them about God and about social values and about how to treat your neighbor. And I would hope that you will back that up here at school. But that's my responsibility, not yours. And what she said in response was absolutely true. And this is really, I think, all you can expect of a non-Christian nation, which I think we get messed up there as well, thinking that America is, and it's not. It's not.
Tell us what she said.
She said in response, I appreciate that, and I'm glad that you do. She said, but you have to understand, there are very, very many people who do not have that same system that you do, those same values that you do. And so what are we supposed to do with those kids? We have them all day long. No one else is teaching them values. You don't want us to teach them values? And they are honestly doing the best that they know. You know, they are Darwinists, and they are all these different things, and I disagree with them. But at the same time, at least common grace, we're going to go there. We're going to say these people do actually care about children for the most part, and they do actually want to do good. And so I'm not going to bash a non-believer for trying to do good as they know and help people who don't have that system. So I think that they're both true. Obviously, it's messed up, but I'm not going to expect anything else out of a society that goes back to what Bill's talking about. We're going to carry our cross. This is not our home. We are pilgrims. This is not our city of habitation. We're just not going to expect this to be, you know, we're not going to expect things to go back to Andy Griffith and Mayberry. It's just not,
it's
going,
not going to. And don't hear what I'm not saying, as Bill says, because I work in a secular school.
Yeah.
So I'm not bashing.
They don't send a yellow school bus.
Yeah,
they don't.
It's true.
I would say that we are sticking our heads in the sand if we didn't see a direct link between what happens in the public school room and what happens on the college campuses.
Absolutely.
Now, where you have these students standing up and saying, "I got my rights. I'm being oppressed." It's being taught to them somewhere.
Sure.
And I submit to you that it's being taught in the classrooms, because I don't believe that America's schools are failing if you want to consider what they're really teaching. Because everybody here on the radio thinks that there's global warming. Everybody I hear interviewed on TV thinks that people are being oppressed. I think they're doing quite a good job of teaching what they teach. I don't think they're failing in their educational aspects.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem is, they're just, in my mind, teaching the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're very good at teaching what they teach.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing. It's a case-by-case basis. It's as agreed to which you participate in that, because you're putting your kids in that school gives you opportunities to interact with unsaved people that you otherwise would not have.
Absolutely.
And you would probably never have had a conversation with that principal out, but now she knows there is a missionary here in our.
There is a saved and baptized family that we met there at that church who had never heard the gospel before.
Right, right. So it's always difficult to determine How much are we going to interact? Yeah. Should a Christian kid go to a secular college? Should they go to a Christian college? Which, it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, there's no easy way of dealing with it because everyone's not ready for it. Everyone's not able to be articulate.
Yeah.
Some can be influenced. Others won't. Should we be fully integrated into the school system? Should we throw the towel in on Wheaton? Or is our kid strong enough to go to Wheaton and be the conservative kid that was interviewed for the article and it talks about the Son of God?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that, especially across the board with our situation. I don't even know what we're going to do in the future. You're bringing up, you know, whether your children are ready or whether they should be subjected to, you know, for instance, their end of school party. I found this out the day of, but they had been practicing a dance with a song that was 6 and 7 year olds. That was just absolutely obscene. The song was about oral sex, and these 6 and 7 year old girls are up there shaking things they don't even have with these dance moves, and just, I mean, absolutely horrible, suggestive things. But it was, I guess, on the other hand, it was an opportunity to be salt and light because we went to the principal's office and said, "This ain't happening, and this is wrong." Yeah, I don't know where the line is for that.
Well, Dave does interpret a dance for us here.
You so screamers and white girls.
it's the same thing about guns, too. We had people spouting that if we just had more people carrying guns, that everything would be better. And that's just not the case. Because in the same situation, you have two people who are very reserved. Maybe if more people, maybe they did try to reach out to these two Muslim people that shot the people in San Bernardino. But what if there had been more Christians showing compassion, inviting them over to the house, bringing them coffee, visiting them every week at the same gas station, having a conversation with them, giving them Christmas? I mean, what if there was that's the ditch that we get into. Well, we just need more guns. Well, maybe we don't just need more guns. We need lots of different things. And arming every citizen isn't necessarily going to make the world a better place.
No.
On the flip side, taking away guns from citizens is also not going to make the world a better place. Both solutions don't get to the root of the problem.
I think most Christians get very post-millennial in that aspect, that it's, even though that would not be most of their theological construct, that's in application the way that they live. We are going to make this the kingdom. We're going to make this thing better. And that's why we get so vociferous when people try to take away our guns and those things like that.
Hand me that dictionary.
That's Fox News
right.
Christianity.
It is.
We're going to see revival. We're going to see revival. Well, maybe we won't.
Well, yeah, it's like those T-shirts and little quilty things you see on the wall that said, "My best days are ahead of you." Well, what if they're
not?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that's it just drives me nuts about our Christianity is the fact that we just always think it's, you know, onward and upward. Maybe not.
Yeah, how does that work?
You know, maybe this school is supposed to be closed next year. I don't know. I mean, we don't want that, of course.
He has plans to prosper us. That means money. I just interpreted that verse for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, in Catalonia right now, they passed a law to where it's illegal to be homophobic, and that's extremely general and vague. And literally, if they want to, they can anonymously, any homosexual can go in and say, that church, that Iglesia Biblica Evangelica in Ripollet, they said this about me and it hurt my feelings just preaching through Romans. And they don't even have to show up for a court date or anything, and we are guilty until proven innocent. And they can slap a 20,000 euro fine on us. And if I do it a second time, they can send me to jail for 6 months. When you're talking about onward and upward, well, honestly, maybe not. Maybe my future's in jail. I don't know that. But biblically, that's not God cursing me, and that's not the absence of God's power. You know, I think we have that so backward in America.
Yeah, and then that requires a ton of wisdom on your behalf. To determine how important is it for you to emphasize those things?
Yep. Where to do them?
Right. I mean, that's incredibly challenging right there because you could easily be foolish.
Sure.
You know, on the street corner proclaiming what isn't the gospel and stuff like that. Somebody would say, "Well, you're a wimp," or whatever the case may be. But you might argue, "No, I'm not. I don't want to lose what I've invested in here for the kingdom." I mean, wow, what a tough situation, you know, because I don't need to preach that in order for you to come to Christ.
Exactly, yeah. That's not my message that is part of the Bible. That's not the gospel.
Wow. All right, so it'll be interesting to see what happens
to this professor and if anything more is said about it. Looking forward to hearing your comments on this podcast. Thanks. Have a great day.